Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're back. We're using Zoom this time, so RIP
what?
Call recorder. Yeah. Oh, are you not on Zoom? Then how can you hear me?
I'm on Skype. I don't know what
what?
I don't know what's happening.
That's bananas. How did that happen?
Very confused. Very confused.
How did that happen? Interesting week this week. For All Mankind came out. Season 2, episode 1. Apple TV Plus. For people who don't know already, Stephen Hackett and I interviewed Ron Moore for Liftoff this week for a special episode. And Dan, you and I are doing a week-by-week review podcast about For All Mankind that people can go
check
out.
Look at us doing a podcast together. How
I know. It's, yeah, if you like this, but have it be more about For All Mankind, that would be the other podcast. That
there
would
you
be
go.
What you should listen to for that. Some, you know, Apple pulling out all the stops in terms of doing, you know, press tour for the people involved in making the show. And they built like an augmented reality app with like little tidbits from the season. And they, you know, they're official podcast for them that they're doing for the
right.
first time, an official Apple TV Plus content podcast for All Mankind. Like, they're pulling out all the stops. I imagine we'll see more marketing like this in the future for them.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because I heard you and Mike talking about it on Upgrade in terms of, like, you know, Apple at this point has enough data to know that it has certain shows that are big hits or certain shows that are consumed by certain groups of people, etc. Like, they started to have that data. And so it's interesting to see where they put their marketing resources, because it's not as if they haven't had plenty of other things that have happened at the same time. But boy, love when my HomePod goes off in the middle.
Wow.
And just thinks I'm talking to it. That was great. Anyways, they have a lot of other shows that are happening. And I think also I'm curious to know sort of the differentiation in the shows that are kind of Apple's considers like its own shows as mm-hmm. opposed to shows that it's bought from elsewhere. Because I've been watching a little bit sort of on and off of Tehran, the spy show.
Right.
Which is a show, you know, produced, I believe, backed by an Israeli company, since
yeah.
it's, I think, largely Israeli production. You know, that's not something Apple arranged to make, right? That was something that was made, and presumably they bought the rights to it, as opposed to some of the other shows. I mean, For All Mankind, you know, it was a launch title. That and The Morning Show are two of the big, like, these are the things that we have, you know, like, our marquee shows, potentially. And maybe that's reflected in the audience as well. That's kind of my question is, you know, Apple's probably never going to give anybody outside the stats, right, the ratings, like, any more than Netflix will give occasionally, especially when it's, like, you know, hyperbolic, like, more people watch this show than any of our other shows or something like that, but they're not going to give hard numbers.
Right.
So you have to sort of read between the lines and say, well, these are the things that they're spending a lot of time talking up or putting a lot of resources behind marketing, which suggests that they're probably popular.
Yeah. Is that it? Or is it that they think there's potential there and they're not as popular as they could be? So they
That's
need to promote it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the beauty, unlike old style, traditional television, the beauty of promoting For All Mankind Season 2 is you also are promoting For All Mankind Season 1, which is available mm-hmm. the same place you would get Season 2, and it's because
right.
everything is on demand. They're also just promoting the existence of the show. And I saw a few tweets fly by this week when we were talking about that we did this interview from people who said, this is great because I'm just finishing up Season 1 now,
mm-hmm.
where people are obviously getting caught up in they missed that show, or they, you know, were distracted or whatever. And now there's a pandemic, so maybe they have more time. And so they're now choosing to watch it as, presumably because they got reminded of it because Season 2 is premiering, which is
perfectly
valid. In fact, it makes marketing a show, I would think, way easier, because traditionally, if it's Season 3 of an ongoing storyline, like, you're basically just reaching the people who watch Season 2 to remind them that Season
right.
3 is there. And if you control the whole content pile, then you're also just getting people to start it.
Yeah. I mean, as with any serialized medium, there's attrition, right? Like, no subsequent season will be as watched as the first season, in the same way that sequel books are never as popular as the earlier books. It's just It's just a mathematic fact, because most people don't walk in and be like, I'll just start with season three, right? Or I'll just start with book four of this series. No, they generally start at the beginning. I mean, every once in a while, but far majority of people start at the beginning, and then there's always some drop-off, right? There are always some people who are like, I read that first book. Yeah. It wasn't for me. I'm not going to read the next one, or forget about it, or what have you. So there's always a decline there. The question is just how much fallen you have. And I was wondering, I was trying to remember, in the case of For All Mankind, it was they renewed it pretty early, as I recall. I feel like they announced season two fairly early on in the run, right? And that's not uncommon also, I think, with a lot of streaming shows these days, because you don't know what that drop off from season one to season two looks like until you have them both out. So a lot of times, I think you buy a couple seasons play the odds.
Apple TV Plus, the story with a lot of their pickups was also that, remember, the service was launched way later than they thought it was.
Right.
And most of these TV deals have a renewal date at which point all the actors and producers and stuff are let out of their contracts. And a lot of the Apple TV pickups happened either before the shows launched or very soon after they launched. And in several cases, it's happened before the shows have launched or before the next season has launched. And I think that that's actually one of the reasons is they have to ultimately, they've seen it, you're right, even though it hasn't launched, they've seen it. And they have to decide right then, like, are we bringing this back or not? Because contractually you have to do that. And season three of For All Mankind was greenlit before, like months ago, I think, was the report on that.
I think
so
that's right.
So it's their, you know, I think that Apple's timing is all off because of the launching of the service for some of these shows. But you know, they're also trying to build a catalog, and unless a show is a real stinker and there's no support behind it at all, and it's not what they wanted and they regret doing it, you want to have them out there because you do get multiple chances to promote it and get people to watch it, and it's in your catalog, and it's in your catalog forever, presumably, or at least for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, not to say that they can't be picky right now, because clearly they are being picky, but again, with a lot of their early stuff, you can afford to give something a couple seasons. It's got to be pretty bad, I guess, is my point.
Yes.
To not get renewed for a second season at this point.
I think it would be a stinker for that, because or it would have
and
to be
we,
way
no
too expensive.
One knows, right, no one knows what the metrics on that are either, right?
Right.
Because it's not like with Nielsen ratings
where
you can look up and
in
see what their audience share was.
In fact, it's possible that it would have to be a stinker in the sense that the producers of the show and Apple TV Plus executives both agree the show is not working. Let's just kill
exactly.
it. And I don't think Apple's had anything quite that bad. They will. I mean, we will get our first official Apple TV Plus cancellation at some point here. I'm curious to see, since Netflix especially has been doing this, you know, three seasons and out thing, where it's very rare that Netflix runs a show for a long time. They seem to be really interested in short runs of a few seasons, and then they just move on to the next thing. I'm interested to see how Apple's model plays out, because Apple feels very much like they're doing what HBO used to do, which is, you know, it's curated, but it's really good. And HBO would let a really great show run for 7 years. And that, I am
sometimes
curious.
Sometimes they cancel them, too.
Well, they do. Tell them,
my
talk
love
to
for
Ron
Carnival.
Moore. Talk
Carnival.
To Ron Moore about Carnival, and you will you will get that. But you know, but you will get your shows that will last for a long time because they're hits on HBO, and Netflix doesn't seem to want to do that with most of its shows. I'm going to be interested to see, as Apple TV Plus evolves, if they are going to go with a quick hook or if they're going to let some of these shows just continue to build in their catalog.
Netflix's strategy, I feel, is very quantity focused, right? I mean, they want Netflix to be your destination for everything. That's the whole thing they announced with, like, oh, we're going to have, like, you know, a movie a week this year, basically. That's like, we're playing the odds, right? We're playing the odds that some of these will be big hits, and the ones that aren't, you know what? It was a movie. We paid X million dollars for it. We were willing to take that loss because a handful of these movies are ones that made way more than we paid for them, right?
Or,
it's the tentpole approach
their,
to a certain extent.
Their audience is so huge, too, that it's also sort of like...
Long tail,
One of these is going to not appeal to everyone, but all of them are going to appeal to some portion of their audience, and that might be good enough. Like, if we release a movie a week, but we really expect the average person to watch six movies a year...
Sure.
from that collection of 52 or whatever it is. And Apple's, right. Apple's just not playing that game, and they're not going to ever play that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same, let's put it this way, it's a different mathematics model too right now, because Netflix's goal, as with something like Disney Plus, is we just need you to keep paying your $15 a month or whatever, right? Your $10-$15 a month. And all that means is we need to provide enough content so that you think, well, I could cancel, but this thing's coming next month, and this thing's coming a couple weeks after that. And it's like, and you know, if you do the math, like it's $15 a month, that's like the cost of renting two or three movies anyways. So as long as, right, like, and the same thing with Disney Plus with all the original content they're doling out now. Well, it's just flowing from WandaVision into Falcon and the Winter Soldier into Loki into What If into like all of it, right? Like, and it's like, all you need to do is keep that firehouse going consistently enough that you feel like, well, but you know, I'm getting my money's worth, right? Like, I don't want to miss out on this thing. And there's always something on, right? Paramount Plus is going to try this with Star Trek too. There's always a Star Trek show on, or always a Star Wars or Marvel show on. So, you know, you're going to keep paying the cost. And that's not, I mean, the math is different because largely people have not had to pay for Apple TV Plus yet. So I think there's an interesting question in terms of, you know, them realizing they also don't have a catalog as much, right? Like, this is exactly what we're talking about. They're building up a catalog because they don't have the virtue of having a huge vault of stuff that they already own. So they're playing a little bit of a different game there, I think. But it's interesting to see how they proceed, because I agree, I don't know how long some of these shows, you know, will run, what the goals are. It's, I mean, like, they were talking, I think they were talking about Foundation a bit this past week, and like, they had some, didn't they have some absurdly like high number of episodes or something? They were like, oh, ideally we would make it, you know, 80 episodes or something.
Well, that,
and it's like,
well I think there's the creative issue too. Like, it's commercial art, right? So there are creative issues, and there's also the money. And those all factor in. So it could be, and I'm just making this up now, and it's probably not, but like, it could be that the morning show, they only really ever really, you know, planned it to be 3 or 4 years and out, right? That nobody involved really wants it to go on for 7 or 8 years. But the truth is, they all have things in their contract, and they could get, if it's a huge hit and Apple wants it to go for 8 years, then they will get paid a lot of money, and it's hard to say no to that. So, it runs as long as everybody wants it to run. But there are cases where the people making it are like, like The Good Place is an example of that, and Game of Thrones actually is even an example of that, where it's like, we're gonna finish our story and be done. And there are shows like that, and then there are other shows that aren't like that. So I think, I wonder, I didn't ask Ron Moore this, but I wonder how far out they think For All Mankind can go, because at some point you will reach our present day, and even though it's a parallel history that they're telling, an alternate history, at some point you've lost all connection with our world and you're just doing a sci-fi show. That said, Ron Moore's good at sci-fi shows, so they could keep going right into the 2040s or whatever, and if they want to.
That's just Star Trek.
Then it is. It's early Star Trek.
I need to pause. Sorry. The electrician, of course, called, right, because this is what happens. How do you want
to... Well, our listeners get everything, so Dan has to go across the street and check in with an electrician, and you will hear us resume later. So, where were we?
Boy, I don't remember.
I have no idea. Part two of the podcast begins now. I got, what else happened this week? I got the new Bridge firmware, or I got it like 2 weeks ago, but I got to talk about it this week because they announced. It's very peculiar.
Yeah.
Because they're not saying anything about it, but it requires the latest beta version of iPadOS.
So you think Apple had to do something so, under the hood there?
I think so. I think that this is now... So the Logitech has a case with a trackpad.
Yes, and I have that one.
And it is not as good a trackpad experience as the Magic Keyboard is.
Right.
I found, for instance... And I did this because I did a bunch of comparison stuff. And this is not something I've written about, but I'll mention it here, which is, like, it turns out I learned a lot of things about how I use a trackpad how I and some of it is habits that have built up over a long time from back when like you had a separate clicker below the trackpad. You remember those days?
Yeah.
I still keep my thumb down at the bottom of the trackpad and press with it.
Yeah, sure.
And some of these trackpads have trouble with that. They're like, why is there a thumb there? But what I did learn is that I tend not to I don't scroll with my two fingers horizontally matched on the trackpad. I scroll with the two fingers vertically on the trackpad. And what I found is beyond about 45 degrees, both the Logitech and the Bridge trackpads are like, no.
Yeah, you know what? That's the thing I always have trouble with when I try to use like my wife's ThinkPad is like just using it the way I would normally. And it always has problems with stuff like that.
Yeah. And so that's, I think, my message here, because comparing it to the Logi thing made it, that was a lot better. Because then I really understood what was going on here. What's going on here is that Apple has invested an enormous amount in multi-touch Magic Trackpad firmware. And right. we see it on laptops, and we see it on the Magic Keyboard for iPad, and we see it on the desktop Magic Trackpad 2, which I use every day. And it's really good firmware, and they don't get enough credit for it. And then you see the Logi and the Bridge ones, and it's like, they're fine. And actually, I think if you started using them without any other trackpad, you would quickly train yourself to make the right sorts of finger movements to do what you want. And it's right. it's two-finger scrolling. The big issue is a year ago they came out with this trackpad. Before there was even official cursor support, they did it with the like assisted touch stuff.
Right.
Yep. And, you know, and even with the cursor support, like their multi-touch gestures weren't very good and their scrolling wasn't smooth. And it was just a bad experience. And I basically said, I would rather not even use this product.
Well, it wasn't designed for everyday usage, right? It was very, they marketed it as assisted technology for a reason.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, the point is that the Bridge keyboard didn't do it, even with the firmware update,
right.
even with the software update that added the cursor support, the Bridge's keyboard was really janky.
Right, because
it's emulating a mouse on iOS, whereas on Windows, their trackpads over there are just Windows trackpads and they work fine.
Yeah.
Apparently. So yeah, a little weird. And then the Logi, just this conspiracy theory is the Logi keyboard is a smart connector keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. It doesn't require the latest beta. Obviously, it works anyway. Even though the quality of the mousing, I would say, is very similar between them, the Logi keyboard already worked. Why is that? And I think it's because it's a smart connector and this thing is Bluetooth. So maybe it's an issue where Apple had to make changes in iOS and iPad OS to support Bluetooth trackpads that are not the Magic trackpad, in the same way that they already supported like Logi's trackpad via smart connector. Regardless, Bridge isn't saying, but it's noticeable because you have to sign up for the public beta in order to get the firmware. It won't work on previous OS versions. So that's fascinating. The bottom line is it's on sale now. It's unclear what the price is going to be going forward, but like, the bottom line is it's a very laptop-y experience, the Bridge keyboards, because it's like the bottom of your iPad. If there was a bottom hinged part, it would be like that. It's not like the Magic Trackpad at all. It's a sort of the same weight and thickness that you'd expect from a bottom of a laptop. So you can adjust it to any position in there. So it's got a wider range of positions than the Magic Trackpad does. And it's way cheaper. It's not quite half the price, but it's close. It's like 60% of the price of the Magic Trackpad. So I do think there's a market for this product, but it's difficult because if you want the best experience, you should get the Magic Trackpad or Magic Keyboard.
Right.
And I know it costs a fortune. I know it does. It is, you do get what you pay for. It is Apple's using its home field advantage there to make the best trackpad experience you can get on an iPad. And the Bridge thing is good, I would say. It's good, but it's not as good as Logitech's, but it's not at the level of Apple, but it's also almost half price. So, yeah.
Well, it's interesting, too, because there have actually been pretty widespread discounts on the Magic Keyboard over the past month or two. I've seen it regularly for like, I don't know, close to $100 off or so, which is interesting. I don't know. I mean, you know, we've talked before about how the way that Apple retails its products through third parties has changed in recent years. And I don't know if that's an effect of that or, you know, some change in inventory or whatever. Who knows? I mean, I would also not be surprised to see eventually, I don't think this year, I don't think next year even, but at some point, I imagine the cost of the Magic Keyboard thing, I think it'll come down a little bit.
I hope so.
But I don't think it'll be a short-term thing because it's still very new, and it is clearly a lot of technology built into that, and they want to recoup that investment. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you're right. I think it's like with any Apple product, right? Like, you could buy a pair of cheap wireless earbuds for $30, but you want the Apple earbuds, and they work better, right? Like, you can even buy a nice pair of Bluetooth. We talked about this with the AirPod Max. You can buy a nice pair of Bluetooth headphones to wear that are far cheaper. They're still expensive, but they're not nearly as expensive as the AirPods Max. But maybe you want the AirPods Max. Maybe there's things about that you want. I don't know. Apple TV. We can go back to that again.
Anyway, I think it's interesting. It's sad that this product took this long to get viable. But like, if going forward, Bridge makes more of these, and they do, they actually announced one for the iPad, for the low cost iPad that I've got here, and it's adorable. It's like you can basically create an iOS laptop now out of an iPad and this new Bridge thing that just came out for the 10.2 inch iPad. It's $459, so that's the cheapest Apple laptop you're going to be able to get. And presumably there'll be educational pricing on this too, because I think that that's what they're targeting. It's got a little OtterBox case that it lives in, and then it clips in like Bridge keyboards do. It clips into the little clips, and it makes a little it's a little laptop basically. And you know, it's taking advantage of the fact that that iPad, the low cost iPad, still is running iPad OS. It will do trackpad support and all of those things. And it's the same deal. It's going to require that OS version, and the trackpad is what. But it's an option. And Apple doesn't make a keyboard and trackpad for that product, right?
Right. I mean, that's why I have a Logitech for my old 10.5 inch iPad Pro, because the Magic Keyboard's a non-starter.
Yeah, exactly.
Much as I'd like it, believe me. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So it's nice that there's more out there. I wish Apple's trackpad goodness was fundamental to all trackpads. But I think what we just have seen is that, like I said earlier, actually Apple's trackpads have a lot of secret sauce in them, and they're very good at what they do. And if you're used to them, and this is the other thing, it's actually what I say about keyboards when people are like, well, why are you so picky when it comes to keyboards and keyboard layouts and stuff? It's like, I want it the way I want it. Part of it is I don't want every time I move to a different keyboard to have to be like a totally different way of typing, right? I want them all to be, basically, I need them all to have the keys in more or less the same place. Otherwise, it gets really disconcerting if I keep switching. So like, this laptop keyboard is great. It's super weird, but you get used to it. It's like, yeah, but if that's the only keyboard I ever use, then great. But it's not going to be, and then it's going to be a problem. So that's sort of what I'm saying about trackpads is I've got the Magic trackpad so ingrained in my brain that it will be hard to use something that isn't as smart as that is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the last time I used a mouse or other pointing device as my as a primary thing on any of my computers.
When Assistive Touch came out for the iPad, I bought a Bluetooth mouse and I used it with the iPad a little bit. And I'm like, this is like, I haven't used a mouse in a long time. It's like, this is so weird. How does it work?
I think I occasionally had to use the Apple. I had the older Magic Mouse, the non-USB chargeable one, the one that just took double A's, that I used when I had the Mini hooked up to my TV, because every once in a while I would need to, like, you know, troubleshoot something that I couldn't do via screen sharing, and I'd have to pull out a mouse. And that one, you know, I think it probably came with the Mini when I bought it. And that's it. Like, but I've never used it. Like, that was like a once in a blue moon thing. Yeah. I have not used it as a primary pointing device in over a decade, because I used to be laptop only for a long time, and I never used a mouse.
Right.
In my laptop.
Let me be crystal clear here. I have not used a mouse as my regular input device for a Mac since 1992. Which is a long time ago now.
Spoken like a trackball user.
This is the thing. So I got in 93 is the answer there. In 93, I got a PowerBook. And in 93, summer of 93, or I guess it was fall of 92, I got the PowerBook. But it, So 92 is right. 92 is right. And then in 93, I did at my job have a mouse, I think, because I had a Mac at my internship at MacUser. But at the end of that summer, or maybe it was that fall, but it was not too long thereafter, one of our editors left, Victoria Von Beale, who was great. She was a great editor. And she left. And, you know, there's that day where they are gone and they're not coming back and their office door is open and there's stuff sitting there. And she had a two-button Logitech, no, Kensington Turbo Mouse, Kensington mm-hmm. Turbo yep. Mouse trackball, sure. Big trackball. And I coveted that thing. I coveted it. And the day after she left, I took Vicky Von Beale's trackball, took it back to my cubicle. And I have been a trackball-only person and slash, you know, future trackpad since then. Like, no mice for me. No mice.
I think for me, it probably would have been, I'm going to estimate.
The laptops are what did it, right? The laptops.
Right,
the
moment, well, same. But...
The moment the Magic trackpad came out, the first one, I was like, oh, I can just do this on all computers. So I guess maybe I used a mouse at my desk when I wasn't using my laptop up until the Magic trackpad. Is that? No, I used the Kensington. I used a version of the Kensington Turbo Mouse all the way up to the point where the Magic trackpad came out, including when they were trying to figure out how do you do a scroll wheel on a trackball. Mm. And the answer was there was a ring around the ball.
Yeah, right.
Which is just stupid. But that was what they did. So, yeah.
I think I had a mouse with my Power Mac G3 that like an external USB mouse because it came with a hockey puck and I replaced that immediately. I remember I had a scroll wheel two button mouse. God, the Accelerate XLR8.
Of course.
Yeah, that was great.
Good times.
I still have it here somewhere because every once in a while, like, oh, wait, you might need a mouse. You never know. And I think as long as I used the G3 as a computer, I had a mouse on it. Up till probably 2007 or 8, it was probably around the time I stopped using it as much. And then I was pretty much laptop only. And then I got an iMac and as soon as I got a modern iMac, I always used the Magic Trackpad. So, you know, easily 13 or 14 years probably.
So that what I'm saying is don't look on Six Colors for really strong opinions about mice.
Mouse reviews. Not a high point of mouse reviews.
Not going to happen. And Apple's really good at the truth is the platform and the platform owner are really good at trackpads because most of the computers they sell are laptops. Duh.
Like I've said this before, I want to replace. We were talking about keyboards. Like I still want to replace the. I have a Magic keyboard, and it doesn't have the inverted T arrow keys. And it's like I want the new generation because they're going to make one, right?
Yeah, they're
revamp
totally
the iMac. Come on. This one's fine. I like this keyboard a lot, except for the fact that it's so small in some ways that I knock it sometimes, and then my fingers are in my muscle memory aims for the wrong part. So I'm always in Logic, and I'm going to delete something, and I hit the backspace key instead because it's where my finger moves over from the trackpad. I need to like anchor them or something.
Yeah, but, I was going to say I bought thin little silicone stickers that I put on the bottom of my keyboard.
That's smart.
And then every now and then you just got to clean them. But they're otherwise they're pretty tacky and they will stay. They get dusty after a while or crummy or whatever. Sure. I'm eating at my desk. I don't know. And then you just wipe those down and then I put those on the bottom of my keyboard and now that it doesn't drift anymore. And when it does drift, I know it's time to clean it.
That's a built-in feature right there.
Shake it out. All right. Well, I don't know how long we've even been going because, you know, electrician, I think it's been about half an hour. Anything else we should talk about before we go?
You know, it's been quiet, honestly. Yeah, like
too quiet.
Ooh.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
It looks as though Apple is this afternoon rolling out some teaser stuff for some upcoming Apple TV Plus shows. They apparently announced that the Rose Byrne comedy is coming out in the summer, and there's a trailer for their adaptation of The Mosquito Coast that just dropped, apparently, as we're talking about this. So maybe they're gearing up for a big, you know, sort of push with their content stuff in the next few months. Other than that, I've been keeping an eye. There's still a little buzz around the car stuff, but sure, it's so all over the place. And we started to hear like vague rumors of a March event, which would time up nicely with a 14.5 release probably. Other than that, it's quiet. It's February. Not a lot happens in February. March, you start to get into the territory where they might, you know, they often have an announcement in March. So it seems likely we'd see something in March. But February, meh, short month.
All right. Well, thank you to everybody out there for being a Six Color subscriber and listening to our silly podcast. You heard us. You heard dishes in the background. That happens in the morning at my house. You heard Dan have to go across the street to talk to an electrician. And my cat was meowing in the background there, too. So this is all of the services. So in the break there, I was talking to my wife. And she was like, you know, you could close the door. And I was like, you know, I said, this is a creative decision for the Six Colors podcast. And I don't know if it's a good one. I don't know if anybody cares. But I want to make it a little bit different than all the other podcasts we do. And I've chosen to make it less professional, but the idea is a little more behind the scenes, a little more casual, a little more there's some noises going on in the background and other stuff happens, and I feel like it's because it's just you and me talking. Anyway,
it's like we're sitting having a cup of tea.
Oh man,
shooting the breeze.
I have a cup of tea, but when we are shooting the breeze, all of those things, right, are true.
It's like,
Dan,
it's like we were sitting in the same
in the
room
same
and doing
room.
It, and then the other people could just hear us chatting.
Can you imagine being in the same room with other people?
No. Barely. No. They're like in like a situation where I felt relaxed enough to be like, let's just sit around and shoot the breeze.
Yeah.
Certainly I've been in rooms with other people,
sure,
but it's always like, how fast can I get out of this room?
I'm breathing in a mask and I need to get out of here fast. Well, okay. Forward to that day. But until then, we will still be back next week doing what we're doing now, which is talking to you through your ear holes via a podcast, because we can't be with each other or anyone else or you. But, you know, February 2021 rolls on. We'll see you next Friday. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.